Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Same ground, different sound. This is Homoground. My name is Maya McDonald, and today we're airing my conversation with composer and producer Emily Wells, all about her current approach to live shows, her new album, This World Is Too Blank For You, her current state of mind, and evolving creative process. I caught up with Emily by phone earlier this spring while she was in Belgium.
Hello.
Hey, Emily.
Hey.
So you're in Bruges. You've got some shows in France, right, next week, and then you're kind of back to the States?
Yes, exactly.
You have this new record, which is crazy beautiful and sounds like it has kind of an interesting story. This was a commission from a couple years back?
Yeah, I mean, the songwriting started as a commission, more for a live performance experience. Although I definitely went into it knowing that it was that time to be writing a new record. So I kind of lucked out because I was able to sort of write a new record and write the commission at the same time.
You had a collaborator or someone who did the chamber side of this?
Yeah, exactly. So this incredible composer and virtuosic violinist named Michi Wanko did the chamber ensemble arrangements. You know, we kind of would send things back and forth. I'd make these demos, I guess you could say, with synths and vocoders and beats and some violin, and then send those to her, and then she would interpret that for completely different sonic reality. And she's just so brilliant and completely elevated these songs in mind-blowing dream kind of ways. So
that sounds like a really cool translation. You sent her all your sample-y stuff, and she turned it into this chamber music.
We had written parts, and then I had to sort of decide what I wanted to be removed of the synths and electronics, and how I wanted to treat the strings after, eventually those got recorded. And it was a process. And, I had been for years just recording strings mostly by myself, occasionally with this cellist that I'm on the road with right now named Dopulio, who's wonderful. And this was really different because we just went into a studio with Metropolis Ensemble in one day, recorded all the chamber arrangements. So then I had all this raw material to work with, which is a producer's dream, because you just it's almost an embarrassment of riches. You know, you're just what can I, how am I? And then you have to kind of hammer away at the edges and kill certain darlings and see what you got on the other side.
I love that stage. It can be a little bit daunting sometimes when there's 60 tracks of things that you thought might be a good idea. what kind of do you have a process for that editing phase?
I definitely have some processes which usually involve muting. You know, there's a lot of muting and seeing how much you can take away and maintain the essence. I have a friend, a producer named Jacob Plassey, who I, if I were a writer, I feel he would be my lifelong editor. And it's such a great relationship to have with someone, because we trust each other. We know how to fight. you know, we know how to like,
that's important.
It's very important. We started working together on my last full length record, Promise. And I feel like I never want to make another record without at least, some kind of interaction with him, at the minimum, you know. We'll kind of, you know, I'll get it to a certain place and then take it into a room with him, and we start discussing what's necessary and what else can go and what doesn't make sense. And, you know, I think for me, and I'm sure a lot of people share this, when you're making something, you understand it like completely, and you understand all of its subtleties, but that doesn't always translate to fresh ears. So he's able to say, I didn't even know that was happening. Like, if you want that to be heard, you have to rid yourself of something else, you know? So it's great to have someone who can just honestly kind of fight their way through the brambles.
I read your artist statement, and I too am interested in the sort of ways that performance and recordings kind of influence each other back and forth. How did you go about putting together your live show for this record?
There's multiple arrangements. Because I can't tour with chamber ensemble, I am forced to have like a broader imagination, I suppose. Which is kind of the story of my life, you know, just sort of like pushing against limitations and creating arrangements for solo, creating, like right now I'm touring with Dopu, the cellist, as I mentioned, and we kind of took elements from, like, his score is pretty great. It's like, there's cello, and then we've literally cut and pasted bits from, say, the French horn part, or bits from the bass part, and then scribblings of different notes, you know, like he's wearing a lot of different costumes, I guess you could say, because he has like a more electronic rig through his cello. So he's able to create these soundscapes. He does some sampling. He's just like such a master of that. So it extends what the record does. And of course, we have to say, okay, we can't do that thing that a chamber ensemble can do. So like, we shouldn't try. We should just try to do something else and evoke something emotionally or sonically that is as good. You know, that's always the goal. But yeah, you know, I'm doing some shows out west with just me and this like incredible drummer composer Shanna Dunkelman, and that'll be like a different thing, you know. Yeah. So and then, you know, we're doing some big chamber ensemble shows as well. It's just those are fewer and further between, and sort of based on budget and size and all that. So
sure, it must be nice to pepper those in once in a while, though, to feel, because nothing quite compares to that feeling from a performer's standpoint anyway.
Totally.
Me,
you're a multi-instrumentalist and a producer and a singer and a songwriter. I find it like really exciting to wear all those hats, but also it can be a little bit like distracting for me and hard to focus. How do you focus?
I guess you kind of have to compartmentalize the processes. So when I was writing the record, for instance, I've written any records, but I find that my process hones over the years. I go into a kind of a different kind of selfhood, I would say, and I allow myself to go into that, and I really limit any performances, you know, which is a bit of a luxury. You kind of have to get really scrappy and frugal and, you know, just tour your ass off and then try to make room for yourself to, be a maker and not a minstrel. And, I engage a lot with literature during this period and poetry and some even, I'm really interested in like the mind and how the mind works and, you know, all of these things are all connected, right? So, and all of that can, if you are open, become part of the songs as well. So, I just try to be that self and try to write songs almost simply, especially this record. I forced myself that I had to pass the Casio test because I don't have like a proper piano in my studio. So if I could like play it on this like, you know, old Casio keyboard and sing along with it, and it still was emotional and still was a good song, quote unquote, then it passed. And otherwise it was out, you know. So that helps me not get too caught in the, you know, because you have some nights where you're working on things and you start to dabble into the production side of it, which is really fun and can be like a great release. I still had to step away at the end of each song, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Then, you know, you move into recording mode, then you move into editor mode, then you move into like insane person mode who is like actually making the final decisions. And then you move into like an intern at your label trying to like make it work. You know, you're just.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it's at least that's my life. So, you know, my favorite part, though, I think is the writing part. I feel most myself, though it can be the most terrifying on an existential level anyway.
Please take Hey, hey, Scantron here to let you know about Homoground's pledge drive. Help keep the Homoground podcast running by making a pledge at patreon.com/homoground. Pledging $10 gets you a limited edition Homoground membership card, plus Homoground stickers, access to top secret content, and our private Facebook group. Shoutouts go to our current Patreon supporters, Chris Lane, Michael Bacon of Mixtape.LGBT, an LGBTQ arts and culture zine, Kale Chips, Critical Explorers of Future Societies, Andy G, Ashley Amon, Corey, Katie Frank, Brian Shields, D, Willard Joyce, Joseph Martin, Kim Baglieri, Lulu, Jordan La Liaison, Queer Public, Lucenti, and Adriana Martinez. If you want your name shouted out on an episode, head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/homoground.
Part of this record has to do with the natural world, right? And our relationship to that. What a vexing moment we're in. Mm-hmm. What is it like tackling these issues in 2017, 18, 19?
It's really sorrowful, and at times it's also like rage inducing, and you know, it's weird, and it's also sometimes you're kind of like, why I need to just like go and commit my life to something else, you know.
I'm caught in this like narcissistic, like weird artist life. Like, what am I good? Am I doing for any people? It felt selfish to me for a second.
Yeah. And I mean, living in the Western world and participating in it is often selfish. I mean, that's just, it's built that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it doesn't mean I'm judging that. I certainly judge myself pretty harshly on that. But you know what I mean? It's just like, it's, you know, we're in this thing that is really built around the self and comfort and you know, all the catchings of participating in this world. So yeah, art, ideally art is a way out of that, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is that like art and capitalism have become like so deeply entwined that there's like this hideous bog that you can find yourself in when you're just trying to like move outside of the thing, of the true purpose of art, right? So
do you like being on tour? Do you, like, I like to think when I'm away. It's good for that for me. What do you get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, tour is such a roller coaster, you know. And every day, I always say you live twice as much life on tour, you know, and you have to be hyper present, which I really like. And I try to live that way all the time. But of course, you know, hyper present and interacting with people every day is exhausting. But what I love the most about it is that you know, hour and 20 minutes or whatever you get on stage every night, when you know, you're really flying and you're, the audience is flying with you. I mean, fuck, that's why we do it, you know?
Can you believe they were caught?
Do you journal or anything while you're out?
Yeah. Dopu is like religious about his journal. And I sense in him a kind of stabilizing effect that it has. So he's rubbing off on me a little. In fact, we went to this art supply store and he bought me a very nice pen with the wish that I write a lot with it. So,
oh, wow. I'm glad I asked.
I have been writing, a fair amount. And I find that right now I'm reading this book called The Lonely City. I just want to read the name of the author. It's Olivia Lang, I think is how you say it, L-A-I-N-G. And it's been such a companion. So I find myself, you know, transcribing passages into my journal from this book more than generating new ideas, which is fine. I don't need to be generating anything right now. It's okay.
Do you listen to music on the road?
We listen, especially in the car. And Dopu and I both like West African, like jazz and stuff like that. We're pretty good companions in this way.
Like the old timey stuff?
Yeah, like Ethiopique, yeah. Or I mean, like new stuff too, but I find that we're kind of returning to that somewhat. But yeah, definitely listen in the car. Although we were listening, we sometimes go into like a pit of like American politics, which is dangerous.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I've never done a European tour. Is the hospitality different than here in the States?
Yes, extremely different. It's quite, it varies. You know, in France, I actually love this. There's this kind of communal thing where all, like, no matter how many bands are on the bill, no matter how many people are working in the club, whether it be the sound engineer or the promoter, we all work together and then we all eat together. So it's, it's a very sort of sweet way of enjoying and getting to know each other. Whereas in America, it's like, here's your $10 buyout, like, good luck, you know. So
that's nice. So when you're on stage, you're like, hey, lighting person, I loved that dinner conversation that we had.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels a nice camaraderie. I find in Switzerland, they're really into like taking you out to a really nice restaurant and like kind of like wining and dining you.
That works.
Yeah. Which can be really fun. Although, you know, before a show, you don't necessarily want to go eat like a giant like plate of pasta and like have to chat. So, you know, it's...
I see your point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like kind of more like a small meal alone in the corner somewhere, please. I completely forgot to ask you about your video projections and the relationship of what's happening on the screen to what the sounds you're making. I know that's a big topic, but before we go, I just wanted to touch on it.
So I started dabbling in this a few years ago, and now it's become such an important part of my process, and also I think an important part of the experience of the performance. And it kind of, I had this like minor obsession with Pina Bausch and was like projecting this Dyclage Decursor in this the Complaint of an Empress. It translates to this movie that she made, which is like difficult to find, but search it if you can on online. It's really remarkable, but don't like sit down expecting like a linear experience. And it's, you know, it's contemporary dance-ish, but it's surrealism and, you know, what you'd expect from her, I guess. And so then it kind of morphed into like this collage, for lack of a better word, of found footage of contemporary dance, yes, but a few films like The Color of Pomegranates. And then there's a lot of found footage of like the melting ice caps or various hurricanes. And I cut them so like they kind of move like that's like the palm trees, for instance, might be moving in a similar way as, you know, Rudolf Nureyev, like, would move or something.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we are kind of like moving through these sort of spectacular bodies. There's a companionship that I also have because, you know, I have to play solo a lot as well. So that kind of brings like friends onto this stage with me. More recently, I've been adding in footage from ACT UP, which for anybody who doesn't know what that is, they formed like in the 80s in New York to fight AIDS and the AIDS crisis and really made remarkable strides, did things, I mean, through direct action, through forcing legislation. I mean, like AIDS and HIV management wouldn't be where it is now without them. I mean, it's really, really just forced people to look at it. And they were super creative and funny sometimes and just profound, provocative movement of people fighting together. And so I have also injected quite a bit of this footage as well into these things because I'm really interested in that movement and like how does that relate to our current crisis, climate crisis right now, and what can we learn from them, because you know it's so tied to science and so tied to a government around the world who refuses to get with the program, you know. So like how can we learn and force that hand? So anyway, that's what the projections are exploring. And a lot of the dancers, Nureyev is in there a lot. He died of the disease. And so, you know, I'm really interested in that relationship. Like his body was so beautiful and profoundly strong and graceful. And, you know, it was eventually just like ravaged. So like, how does that relate to our planet? And yeah, it's a big question. So I'm sorry. I know we're at the end, but I had to say it all.
I'm so glad that you did. And feel thankful to you for using your stage time in that particular way.
Mm.
I will let you get on to dinner in Bruges, and I'm really so grateful for the chat. So thanks, Emily.
Thank you, Maya. It's really a pleasure, and look forward to seeing you again soon, I hope.
Many thanks to Emily Wells for her time and her music, of course. This is Homoground. My name is Maya McDonald.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.